He was hauling a lot of metal, but felt like the Baron of the world.
You've never skipped a meal in your life. I'm surprised you're still alive, what with missing breakfast and all.
Lots of grub in the saddlebags. All you want.
We can eat on the way.
John looked directly at the sun. Taking one last swallow of the coffee, he poured the rest on the grass and tossed the dirty cup into the cargo pod on the rear of his bike.
I want to get this over as soon as possible.
I can load that into a blaster. Where do we start looking for this Ryan?
First, we got a little task to do. A private matter.
Hey, yeah, we're in the zone. We're gonna visit Dempster, huh?
Removing his combo long blaster, John slid the weapon into a cushioned holster set along the black frame. Then, getting onto the bike, John started the engine.
Visit? Yeah, that's one way of putting it. Now, let's move out!
Leaving the deep storage locker, the companions shoved their backpacks underneath the grating and out the other side. JB was the last to go, and paused for a few minutes inside the cage to rig a tripwire between two of the jack stands. The end of it connected to a U.S. Army Claymore mine.
Think that's really necessary?
JB released the arming switch and crawled to the next pair to do it again.
Booby traps are never necessary until one saves your ass.
Besides, we're fairly sure Operation Kronos is looking for us. Might as well give them something to find.
Now that last sentiment, Mildred agreed with. And while the two men were busy setting their booby traps, she dutifully checked her new blaster. Ryan had found an entire cache of automatic weapons. M16 assault rifles, M16-M203 combinations, Thompson 45 caliber machine guns and such. It was quite an arsenal. After some heated debate, Mildred, Christy, and Jack all decided on the compact 9mm Heckler & Koch MP5. It was very lightweight and used the same caliber ammo as the Sig Sauer and Uzi, which was always a good thing. Doc, the odd man out, had disdained accepting one, espousing his dislike of rapid fires. But the Vermont scholar did agree it would be sensible to augment his firepower, and reluctantly took a Ruger 44 caliber revolver. The stainless steel hog leg was resting in a military police web belt around his waist, two side pouches taut with spare ammo speed loaders. With those, he could reload the Ruger in a matter of moments, unlike the Lamah, which took a minimum of 10 minutes to fully repack each of the 9 chambers. JB finally stood and dusted off his hands.
Okay, that should do it. Set off one, and all four will blow. That's enough to turn a Sec-Hunter droid into a grease stain.
Then add two more.
Looks good. Can't spot a thing.
He looked at the ceiling.
Now, let's see if we can get out of here and find out what's waiting for us outside.
Continuing the interrupted sweep of the redoubt, the heavily armed companions found the upper levels as devoid of anything as the lower ones. Strange that the deep storage locker should be so full, and the rest of the base so starkly empty. They rode the elevator to the topmost level.
Should take the LAV. Not a tank, but close.
That's for damn sure.
When they got to the top, all conversation stopped. As the doors parted, the companions spread out across the garage, but nothing seemed to have changed since their last visit. They'd encountered many empty redoubts before. Most of the installations were deserted, but this was the first in a long while packed with weapons. Traveling down the zigzag tunnel, the companions reached the exit without incident. At the blast door, Christy tapped in the exit code on a keypad. As the last digit was entered, Ryan pressed down on the lever, and the whole tunnel shook slightly as the seamless expanse of black metal began to move. The sound brought everybody to attention. Normally the blast door was silent, or gave only a low growl, but not loud grinding. Was it broken? Had the base been nuked? Ryan and JB checked the rad counters on their lapels, but the devices weren't registering anything.
Gaia, we're underwater!
Christy tried to hold onto the keypad for support. The flood was pushing hard against her boots, and she was having trouble standing. Frantically, she punched the code into the keypad again to try to get the door to cycle closed. But the automatic process couldn't be interrupted, and the door continued onward until the exit was completely wide open. Incredibly, the flood began to slow, and finally eased to a meager wash rippling along the floor. Moving in swirls, the dirty water began to gurgle into a series of drains set along the walls, and stopped spreading after only a few yards. Mildred shook her head in admiration. The designers of the redoubts truly had thought of everything. When the door finally responded to the command code and began to close, Ryan sloshed closer and tried to glimpse outside. The light from the fluorescent tubes of the access corridor only reached a short distance down a long, flooded brick tunnel. After the portal sealed, Ryan waved a hand.
Open it again, lover.
As Christie fed in the code again, then jerked the lever, more water came into the redoubt, but nowhere near as much as before. Going to the very edge of the doorway, Ryan squinted into the darkness, but couldn't see an end to the tunnel. Dropping to one knee, he studied the water, then experimentally dipped a finger into the fluid. There was no burning sensation or reek of sulfur. This was just water, not a pool of acid rain. But how deep did it go?
Doc, try using your stick.
Joining his friend at the entrance, Doc withdrew his steel sword from inside the ebony stick and eased the tip into the dark water. The blade went all the way to the handle before it stopped.
Nearly 3 feet deep.
He then retrieved the sword and wiped it dry on a handkerchief before sheathing it again.
It's shallow enough for us to wade through, but we're not going in without more light.
Gators like shallow water. Snapping turtles, eels, snakes, all sorts of things.
Damn straight.
We're also going to need a depth gauge of some kind. Maybe we could use a wrench tied to a length of rope and toss it ahead of us along the way.
Light I can give you.
JB pulled out one of the flares he found in the locker. As the stick burst into life, the reddish light showed deep into the watery tunnel, and still no end was in sight. Swinging his arm back and forth, JB built momentum and threw the flare down the brick tunnel. It went flying for a good 20 feet before splashing into the water. As the flare sank, the light became muffled, a riot of bubbles forming around the magnesium flame, but it didn't go out. The flare dropped a few feet and stopped on the bottom. The radiant pool clearly showed the brick bottom of the tunnel in distorted relief. If there was anything alive in the water, it stayed in the black shadows outside the range of the dying flame.
The ground must have sunk during a nuke quake, then groundwater filled it over the years.
Ryan scowled at that. A nuke quake? Now there was a nasty thought. Quickly, he checked the rad counter on his lapel again, turning in different directions, and was satisfied when it registered only the usual amounts of background rads. The tunnel wasn't hot.
At least it's fresh water, which means we're not going into the ocean. That is, unless this leads to one of the Great Lakes. Those are oceans.
Ocean, lake, or reservoir, it makes no damn difference. We can't use the Matrans, which leaves this as the only way out.
Could be a booby trap. If Kronos put here, want us to leave this way.
Fully armed? That makes no sense.
Shit. White coats never make sense.
Mildred had a wry remembrance of a hospital administrator. Doc said nothing, but his personal opinion on the subject was clearly readable on his somber features. If these weapons came courtesy of Operation Kronos, then it was a trick, and the guns were simply there to lull the companions into a false sense of security so that they'd be caught off guard when the real trap was sprung.
Even paranoids have enemies.
The Hummers and the LAV can go through water this deep. No prob there.
Although if the water gets any deeper, they both sink like stones going to hell.
I say we take the LAV. I like having some armor around me. Reminds me of the days we rode Blaster with the Traitor.
Resting the stock of his blaster on a hip, Ryan almost smiled at that reference.
Fair enough. We'll wreck the wags. And if the LAV is usable, we take it. If not, that big GMC truck we saw will do.
Truck? Shoo, no armor at all.
Plenty of room for cargo. The 4x8 truck was wedged in pretty good among the other wags. It'd be a triple bitch to get out. But the smaller 4x6 was in the clear. Tires were flat on the LAV, but that we can fix.
Everybody in the group was becoming a pretty good mech out of sheer necessity.
Okay, a truck and a couple of Hummers as escorts. But we try the LAV first.
Fair enough. Hey.
Ryan scowled. In the sputtering light of the dying underwater flare, something large moved within the murky shadows. Taking a hesitant step closer, he blinked, unsure if he had actually seen anything. The flare was throwing crazy shadows everywhere.
You know, I could have sworn...
Shiny wetness reared up from the water. Backing away, the companion stared at the giant thing, whatever it was. Some form of amorphous mass, sort of like a gigantic jellyfish. There were no details, no eyes or ears or fins, only the smooth, shimmering body that constantly changed shape.
What is this Hellenic Kraken?
The blob turned toward Doc, and a ripple of shimmering light moved through its body, briefly revealing a bizarre metallic framework inside the creature. As the flexing array of struts moved, the translucent body followed. JB made a face.
Ozone, just like...
His eyes went wide.
Just like a Cerberus cloud.
As if knowing the word, the front of the impossible thing split apart as if slashed with a hot knife to reveal a red, gaping maw lined with stubby protrusions. And then the inhuman guardian charged.
Ace it!
Ryan fired the 6-hour, but the soft lead round smacked into the jelly and simply passed through to hit the brick wall behind and ricochet away. Suddenly, the 4 rapid fires began to pepper the shapeless thing. But the combined hail of hot lead had the exact same effect as the subsonic 9mm parabellum rounds. Ryan frantically reloaded.
Fire blast! We can't even touch the thing!
Exactly like a Cerberus cloud. The creature had to be another guardian of the redoubts. Just some type they had never encountered before. Or was this the trap? Releasing the Uzi to hang from its shoulder strap, JB pulled around the S&W M4000 pump-action shotgun and unleashed its fury. Loaded with steel slivers instead of buckshot, the barrage of flechettes cut deep into the quivering mass and struck the moving framework inside at several points. A few of the twinkling lights died. Several flared brightly. The titanic guardian now swiveled toward JB.
Keep firing!
Christy threw herself toward the keypad. Moving fast, Christy slapped in the memorized code, and the massive adamantine slab started to slide across the entrance. Moving with the closing door, the companions stayed behind the protective metal, constantly firing their weapons as the guardian loomed ever closer. Holstering the six-hour auto-loading pistol, Ryan clawed for a grin, uncaring what kind it was. Jerking out the ring, he flipped the handle and threw the bomb hard at the shiny mass. The sphere smacked into the guardian and bounced off to hit the brick wall and splash into the water. Incredibly, the cyborg lurched to the opposite side of the tunnel, as if it knew what a grin could do. Flattening itself against the bricks, it began undulating for the narrowing opening in the blast door, just as a fireball blossomed under the water. Steam and muted thunder expanded to fill the tunnel, and a whole section of the guardian turned gray and pebbly, closely resembling rotten meat. The blast door was almost shut, but the concussion pushed through the crack to shove the companions backward, the searing heat singeing their hair and clothing. Covering their faces, the companions hastily retreated down the tunnel, getting off a few last shots until the door shut. The thermal wave was abruptly cut off. Mildred leaned wearily against the wall.
Oh, thank God. This has really been one hell of a... Oh, shit! Look!
There, on the floor inside the redoubt, was a small piece of the Guardian, black tendrils stretching from its shaking form to the blast door. The cyborg had obviously tried to get through the closing portal, and a chunk got nipped off. But even as the companion started closer, the bent skeleton inside the blob began expanding and reconstructing at an incredible speed. Within seconds, it had completely reformed, with a leering new red mouth.
Fuck!
The cyborg folded itself into a ball and started rolling forward.
Elevator!
Ryan turned to run as fast as he could. They needed some combat room to tangle with this thing, and the narrow access tunnel was about as bad a place for a firefight as he'd ever seen. There was no room to dodge, and nothing to duck behind for cover. Dashing down each leg of the zigzag tunnel, the companions maintained a constant barrage at the rolling guardian. Doc tried a grin, but it bounced off the jelly and landed behind the cyborg to harmlessly detonate in its wake. Erupting into the garage, the companions spread out through the collection of wags, heading for the elevator. They didn't know what Ryan had in mind, but they trusted his combat instincts. Reaching the door to the stairs, Christy started to reload the rapid fire when she saw Ryan across the garage scramble over a city wag. Veering sharply around the imposing LAB, Ryan went straight for the fuel pump. Yanking the hose free, he squeezed the control in a short burst and made a puddle on the concrete floor. Now that he knew the rate of flow, he flicked his butane lighter to life and knelt to ignite the fluid. The condensed fuel immediately caught, the bluish flames dancing above the dwindling pool of pre-dark juice. Suddenly, the Guardian rolled into sight from behind the LAB, and Ryan squeezed the handle again, wide open this time. A powerful lance of fuel shot out of the nozzle to touch the shrinking puddle and instantly burst into flames. The Guardian paused at the sight, and Ryan lifted the makeshift flamethrower to sweep the burning column across the pulsating cyborg. The creature was covered in flames, its red mouth appearing once more, and it clearly was in unmistakable agony. Sluggishly, it tried to move away, but Ryan advanced to the end of the hose, arcing the spray high to keep the rain of fire centered on the horrid thing. Its outer skin was already gray and pebbly, and thick ooze was dribbling from the cracked expanse. Greenish smoke was rising from the cooking jelly, the air vents in the walls of the redoubt audibly increasing their suction in a valiant effort to clear the atmosphere.